It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Josh Hammer, and welcome back to America on Trial, your one-stop shop for all your legal news pertaining to the 2024 presidential election and all the major pressing legal headlines affecting our country and our increasingly endangered American way of life. On today's show, we take a deep dive yet again into the campus standoffs. Things have reached a boiling point this morning at no less grade a bastion of American higher education and indeed free speech than the University of Chicago, my own law school alma mater. I want to unpack the specific debate over free speech itself. We've touched on numerous aspects of this particular roiling debate on campus. We have not done a deep dive on the specific nature of free speech. I have lots and lots of thoughts on that. All of that and more in today's deep dive. And then later on the show, in today's closing argument, it looks like Israel's invasion of Rafah, which is quite literally months in the making, is finally getting underway, notwithstanding the Biden administration's constant threats to withhold weapon shipments, which some reports are showing that they are already doing. Lots to unpack there. We'll get to all of that and more in today's closing argument. But for now, as always, we begin by going around the horn. We begin where else in New York City, where Donald Trump remains in court as part of the so-called hush money payment case and involving Stormy Daniels and Michael Cohen and all of that. Yesterday, there were a couple of major headlines from this ongoing criminal trial in the courtroom of the very compromised Justice Juan Merchan in New York City. First of all, Juan Merchan yet again has found former President Donald Trump in contempt of court. He has fined him. Yet again, he has fined him another $1,000 for an alleged violation of Donald Trump's sprawling and arguably, in fact, probably unconstitutional gag order. The money quote and really the exchange that is garnering a lot of headlines yesterday is where Juan Merchan said, quote, "It appears that the $1,000 fines for the gag orders, that is, are not serving as a deterrent. Going forward, this court will have to consider a jail sanction." This follows up, incidentally, on something that Merchan had said last week, which is this increasingly potent, it seems, an increasingly viable threat of possible incarceratory punishment if Donald Trump does not obey the subjective and idiosyncratic dictates of what John Merchan apparently feels violates this incredibly dubious gag order. So Trump immediately went to Truth Social, as is his wont, and he said, quote, "The liberal judge in New York just threatened to throw me in jail. They want me in handcuffs." This is the state of the standoff right now, and it's hard to see exactly where this goes from here. I mean, is Merchan really going to do it? Is he seriously going to try to throw the former president in jail for violations of a gag order that is of dubious constitutionality in the first place? If you're Donald Trump, my unsolicited advice to him would be, you know, look, I understand that the whole optics of this are probably good to an extent for fundraising purposes, but maybe just maybe cool it a little bit when it comes to the Truth Social braggadocio. I mean, you don't want to literally end up in jail here unless you think that actually could generate just a fundraising bonanza. If you actually do have to spend an overnight trip to the slammer and get in there with all the inmates. So I understand the political calculus there as well. But in any event, this situation shows no signs whatsoever of dying down anytime soon. That is the standoff between Donald Trump and the judge here, Juan Merchan. In the actual testimony in the criminal trial yesterday, we heard a lot about how Michael Cohen, Trump's so-called former fixer, actually got the $130,000 in payments that were allegedly made for reimbursement for the hush money given to Stormy Daniels and Karen McDougal. We heard a lot about that in court yesterday. Jeffrey McConney, the Trump Organization's former controller, he testified that he interacted, quote, minimally with Michael Cohen during this period, but it was actually Alan Weisselberg, the twice convicted Alan Weisselberg himself, the former CFO of the Trump Organization. He apparently was the one who was most usually involved in the disbursements of cash reimbursements to Michael Cohen. And we heard a lot of details about this and whether it was under the accounting books as legal services and this and that. And again, I just don't really care about a lot of this testimony because as I have tried to explain on the show, I don't actually think that it is legally relevant. As juicy as it may be from a headline grabbing purposes, I still think that the prosecution, if we're actually going to the black letter law here, has a tremendous uphill slog to try to climb here. And from a strictly legal perspective, I do not think that they are going to do that. But in any event, that was the bulk of the testimony yesterday in court pertaining to the precise nature of the reimbursements and who had to sign off on the checks and in what part of the accounting books it was ledgered as. In court today, we are expecting Stormy Daniels to testify, so that could potentially be newsworthy, and we look forward to reporting it tomorrow on America on Trial with Josh Hammer. From New York City down to Georgia, I want to just briefly touch in on Georgia. I keep on trying to check in on Georgia because it is one of the major cases, and it was so much in the headlines there for at least a month and a half, 2 months as we were getting our show started a few months ago, and then it basically disappeared. And I want to just issue another reminder of that. The deadline that we are now waiting on from District Court Judge Scott McAfee's boss, or bosses, the appellate court judges and the Georgia Court of Appeals, we are now getting very close to the actual deadline where they are going to have to say whether or not they approve of Scott McAfee's remedy to dismiss the special prosecutor, Nathan Wade, but not DA Fannie Willis herself. The deadline for that is a week from Thursday. So it is Thursday, May 16th. That is the last day, according to my reading of the legal calendar, as the last day for the Georgia Court of Appeals to actually go ahead and issue this decision on whether or not they can accept Scott McAfee's order dismissing Nathan Wade, but not Fannie Willis. So stay tuned for that. That is coming up sooner rather than later. Finally, from Georgia, we go up to Washington, D.C. I want to just briefly check in on something that is a little legal and a little political, which is this unfolding roiling drama between Marjorie Taylor Greene and some of her closest allies in the U.S. House and Mike Johnson. Marjorie Taylor Greene has been threatening to file the motion to vacate the chair of the speaker, which is her prerogative to do. This is one of the major concessions, if you go back to January 2023, that hardliners, the Thomas Massey's, Chip Roy's of the world and so forth, were able to extract from then-Speaker Kevin McCarthy as part of the 15-plus rounds that he ultimately needed to secure the Speaker's gavel. They managed to secure this single vote motion to vacate the chair. And Marjorie Taylor Greene has been threatening to do exactly that to Mike Johnson, who's barely been in the Speaker's seat for 5-6 months or so. She's been threatening to do that because of his recent passage of this roughly $100 billion foreign aid boondoggle, $60 billion of which goes to fund the highly unpopular war in Ukraine, all of this at the expense of our beleaguered and besieged U.S. southern border. Marjorie Taylor Greene has threatened to do this, but the reading of the tea leaves today, based on everything I'm seeing this morning, is that she is increasingly willing to back down because virtually no one is standing with her other than just a few other hardliners in the House, folks like Matt Gaetz and Lauren Boebert, maybe Thomas Massey himself there. But Donald Trump has thus far not come to Marjorie Taylor Greene's rescue. And in fact, it is thought that behind the scenes, Donald Trump is trying to discourage her from going ahead and doing this. So it seems like there might be something of a ceasefire, to borrow a term that is in the news a lot these days. There is going to be probably a rapprochement and a cooling of tensions here. If I had to guess, I would be more surprised than not at this point if Marjorie Taylor Greene actually proceeds and goes ahead to file this motion to vacate the chair. I think she's looking for something that she can go basically back and save face with to her own colleagues there in the House and her own voters back home in northwestern Georgia. But we will see. This is not necessarily going to end today, but it could be ending sooner rather than later. I, for one, will be curious to see what exactly the contours of any deal that allows MTG to save face, what the contours of that actually look like. I very much look forward to seeing that. That's it for today's Around the Horn segment. Up next in today's deep dive, a standoff at the University of Chicago, my law school alma mater, as the latest university to dismantle its Gaza encampment. Lots of debate over free speech, which UChicago is a bastion of. What does it mean? What does it not mean? All of that and more when we get back.
Wyndham Hotels and Resorts makes travel possible for all. Whether it's the long haulers looking for a great cup of coffee, a roomier rest for the on-a-whim road trippers, or a place to make summer memories with the whole family. No matter who you are, where you're going, or why, with 24 trusted brands to choose from like La Quinta, Days Inn, and Super 8, your Wyndham is waiting. Get the lowest price at WyndhamHotels.com. Restrictions apply. Visit website for more details.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome back. It's time for today's deep dive. So the campus unrest is something that we have been increasingly following and commenting on this particular show. There's all sorts of ramifications to this unfolding drama on America's university campuses from a political, cultural, social, and indeed a legal perspective. And things have finally reached a boiling point at no less a bastion of American higher education and a bastion of free speech itself than the University of Chicago, which is where I went to law school and part of the University of Chicago law school class of 2016. And if you know anything whatsoever about the University of Chicago, it is probably one thing that comes to mind, which is free speech. And indeed, under the current president's predecessor, President Robert Zimmer. Under President Zimmer, who was the longstanding president of the University of Chicago, he really did make the university known as a bastion, a genuine hub for free speech on campus. In fact, it was in 2015. I was there at the time. I was a second year law student. It was right then that the University of Chicago adopted its famous free speech declaration, known as the Chicago Principles today, where they adopted the Chicago Principles. It was actually led by, among others, Jeffrey Stone, who is a liberal. He's a man of the left. He's a liberal-leaning constitutional law professor at the University of Chicago Law School. I disagree with him when it comes to any number of issues, but to his credit, he is an old-school ACLU-style liberal when it comes to free speech. He is not of the modern woke, of the modern censorious ilk. And he led Chicago to adopt the so-called Chicago Principles, which have subsequently been adopted by any number of other universities across the country, universities like Princeton University and many other well-known institutions of higher education. Some of those institutions have actually adopted them meaningfully. Some have just done so rhetorically. But it really was Chicago that truly got this ball rolling in the late 1960s with the Calvin Report, if you want to go back that far. And then really with 2015, by reaffirming what is now known as the Chicago Principles, the University of Chicago has always been a true bastion of free speech. So with all of that said, that is the context for what is now happening at the University of Chicago's campuses, where there has been a lot of drama when it comes to the on-campus mini jihadis, the pro-Hamas anarchists, women tearing asunder campuses all across the country, and things finally reached a boiling point overnight over the past 24 to 36 hours or so when they finally sent in police. That is, the University of Chicago's current president finally called in CPD, Chicago Police Department, to go ahead and actually break up, in conjunction with the University of Chicago's police department, the on-campus encampment. They had the encampment just like elsewhere, and they were blocking access to certain parts of the lawn, and they were making certain ridiculous demands. At this point, it is a sadly very familiar tale. We talked about the breakup of the UCLA encampment last Thursday. Columbia infamously had their own standoff last week. And the University of Chicago, long known as a citadel, a beacon of free speech, this is the latest university that has now had this standoff. And all this kind of has got me thinking more about free speech. And there was a long article in the New York Times yesterday written by Jeremy Peters, one of the political reporters there. And the title of this article is, quote, "UChicago says free speech is sacred. Some students see hypocrisy." And it's kind of this foreboding image that the New York Times uses of the dimly lit University of Chicago grounds, where you see the Gaza encampment there. And the questions that are being asked here and being raised are questions we've been discussing in the broader culture and American society for weeks now, which is, what are the limits of free speech? What does free speech actually mean, and so forth? I actually debated many of these questions at Harvard University as part of an ISI Intercollegiate Studies Institute sponsored debate on this very topic just about a month ago or so, maybe 4 weeks ago, in Cambridge, Massachusetts. But in any event, it is worth re-emphasizing that free speech does not include on-campus encampments that physically block certain students from attending class or accessing grounds. Free speech does not encompass heckler's vetoes, the likes of which I personally was subjected to back in November at the University of Michigan, when I was shouted down by pro-Hamas jihadist anarchists for 35, 40 minutes before I could even continue my speech. To have an on-campus free speech regime does not encompass harassment, intimidation, and unhinged annihilationist genocidal rhetoric against a certain group. That is not free speech. And I want to just briefly quote a few paragraphs from an essay that I wrote on this alongside my friend Seth Liebsen. We wrote on this very topic for the Claremont Institute's online American Mind Journal. This is a few paragraphs from an essay that Seth Liebsen and I wrote on this very topic. The essay was entitled, quote, "Free Speech, Sense, and Sensibility." Gosh, we wrote this essay 6 months ago, and it has sadly never been more relevant than it is right now. So here we go. Here's an excerpt from this essay that I would like to read on today's podcast. A sounder view of speech, one explicated by Justice Samuel Alito in his courageous solo dissenting opinions in both U.S. versus Stevens of 2009 and Snyder versus Phelps of 2011, is one less grounded in the idiosyncratic and self-satisfied words of an individual provocateur, and more grounded in the telos of a free speech regime that has existed since the Academy of Ancient Greece, the pursuit of truth. When purported contributions to the public discourse exceed substantive dissident speech and become unmoored from anything remotely smacking of the pursuit of truth, they are liable to be treated as something less than fully speech qua speech for either moral or legal, that is, tort or criminal law, purposes. Calls from jihad sympathizers to exterminate the Jews of Israel, or for that matter, to gas the Jews anywhere they can be found all over the world, certainly fit into this category. As Justice Alito explained in his Stevens and Snyder dissents, the First Amendment was meant to protect a vast array of thoughts and beliefs, but they are thoughts and beliefs to be offered in a marketplace of ideas dedicated to perpetuating and securing certain ends of governance, such as the blessings of liberty and the republican form of government that the Constitution's preamble invokes. The First Amendment was not meant to protect anything or everything, and it was certainly not meant to be a suicide pact allowing for the perfectly equal moral or legal claims of, say, Joe Biden and Donald Trump on the one hand, or Ali Khamenei and Hassan Nasrallah on the other hand. The Constitution was never meant to yield to a liberal marketplace of fascism, communism, or Islamism, or explicit calls to racial or ethnic mass murder. Our founders were not moral or political relativists. They saw our Constitution as necessary not merely to tolerate, but to affirmatively secure substantive justice. Today, in a perverse twist, political speech that debates the best opinions about how we govern ourselves with regard to political contentions that have been with us since time immemorial have been censored on college campuses. When it comes to the war in Israel and Gaza, Americans living under our Constitution might disagree on the merits of a U.S.-prodded ceasefire, whether Hamas-supporting foreign students ought to have their visas revoked, or any number of other public policy issues. But bloodthirsty marches on behalf of genocide must not be confused with morally or legally legitimate, quote-unquote, free speech. Our regime recognizes these not as differences in the degree of would-be speech, but in the kind of speech. That is a very important point, if I don't say so myself. It is a source of deep confusion in our First Amendment jurisprudence to this day, which many even so-called conservative justices fail to understand. It is something that I have been very frustrated about for a very long time, certainly. And I just had to get that out there because it has really got me thinking what's happening right now at the University of Chicago. And I hope that, if nothing else, that clarifies what is going on there. So the University of Chicago, which is very much a bastion for free speech, must continue to enforce free speech, and perhaps somewhat paradoxically, that actually is going to require intense cracking down and severe consequences for those who have been putting up these encampments and actually disrupting the very free flow of ideas that an actual regime of free speech is dedicated and promulgated to advancing and securing. That's it for today's deep dive. Up next in today's closing argument, we're staying on a similar topic here. Israel looks like it's going into Rafah. What is going on there? All of that and more when we come back.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
This podcast is sponsored by Cloud Optimizer.
As a business owner or IT manager, are your cloud investment costs going up and you don't know why? It's time for Cloud Optimizer. As you migrate your business to the cloud, what you're spending and why you're spending it can get a little hazy. But Cloud Optimizer clears up the mystery and puts the cloud to work for you. Cloud Optimizer starts by analyzing usage patterns, right-sizing resources, leveraging discounts you may not be aware of, implementing automation, and much more. And by reducing unnecessary expenses and maximizing performance, Cloud Optimizer guarantees you a savings of 5 times what you spend for their service. As you utilize cloud-based services more and more, you don't have to lose sight or control of your spend. You can stay agile, streamline your costs, and optimize your performance, plus save significant money with Cloud Optimizer.
Make the cloud work for you with Cloud Optimizer. Get a free assessment and find out how much you can save by going to cloudoptimizer.com. Go to cloudoptimizer.com for your free assessment. That's cloudoptimizer.com.
Welcome back. It's time for today's closing argument. So ceasefire talks have collapsed for the time being. There was a lot of actual confusion on this front yesterday. It looked like Hamas had agreed at the last minute to a ceasefire deal. And then, as it turns out, the terms that they agreed to were actually not terms that Israel had proposed in the first place. So no one was really on the same page there. So it looks like Israel is probably going in. They have started to evacuate the so-called civilians, emphasis on so-called, the so-called civilians in Rafah, which is the southernmost town in the Gaza Strip, right on the border there with Egypt. And it looks like that the tanks could start to roll in anytime soon. I just want to make and reiterate the very basic and straightforward point that this is 100% absolutely beyond the shadow of a doubt necessary from a military perspective to eradicate the Hamas cancer from the Gaza Strip. Hamas has all of its remaining major assets right there in Rafah, the southernmost town in the strip on the border with Egypt. It is believed that that is where the remaining hostages are currently being held. There is no eradicating Hamas without going into Rafah. It is the logical equivalent of telling the Allied powers to stop short of Berlin, to stop in Frankfurt or Dresden and something like that. No, you have to go to Berlin. You have to kill Hitler. You have to kill the head of the snake. That is very much the exact same situation here. It is ridiculous, frankly, that it has taken this long. The IDF should, in my opinion, have started this operation two and a half months ago. That is basically how long they have been on the outside of Rafah waiting to go in. It appears that they are finally here. And God willing, I hope that the operation will be a success with the barest and most minimum casualties possible. And hopefully this war comes to an end with the proper result, which is the eradication of the Hamas cancer sooner rather than later, God willing. That is it for today's American Trial with Josh Hammer. Thanks, Zoe, for tuning in. We'll be right back with you tomorrow morning.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void or prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.